Okay, so I think what I will do is I'll explain non-binary animals. I think we all know for an experimental conservation that we have them in nature, every now. But the theory is pretty compelling. So but what I mean by non-binary animals, I mean quantum particles. With a statistic, which is given by the representation of the grade groups into unit relation space. So this is Kn by Kn, some number, unit relation space. And this is bigger than 1. To be non-binary. So I think yesterday we heard a really great talk that if you do have them, and then it's kind of nice to do a quantum computing with them. So the real question we don't know is something like this. How we can get electron leakage to give us this non-binary area. So by electron, I really mean any microscopic constituents, because there are too many particles, the worst particle there, very confusing. So when I say particles, or quasi-particles, I really mean area, so it all means here.
Wayne, yeah, I think we have to put a microphone.
Okay, so I'm just saying that when I say electron, just a generic word for microscopic constituents. So it can be anything, it can be co-atoms, it can be bosons, whatever. So that's a pretty hard question. So how can we get electrons which really have a bosonic or fermionic statistic to get something like this? So that's something I won't see anything. So what I will focus on is something which is well known mathematically. So something called Jones Kaufman TQFTs at level equals 1, 2, 3, etc. Okay. So they are well studied by mathematicians, by topologists, but we really don't know, you know, what to do with them. So, well, except like a few. I will also talk about their doubles also. I'll explain what's the difference. By the way, I'm a mathematician, but I'm really learning seriously physics, so I really welcome any comments or any questions or whatever. So if there's a language problem, I'm very happy to stop and try to translate. So our focus on is this so-called Jones-Kaufman theory. Now, there are two reasons to be interested. So the physical reason is the following. My favorite conjecture in physics is due to Nick Reed and Rezai. If you have the fractional quantum Hall liquid at nu equals 5/2, and then the conjecture is the non-binary statistic is given by the Jones-Witten, the k equals 2, Jones-Kaufman theory. There's a very difficult question about, you know, what happens to the billion parts. That turns out to be very difficult. And I work really hard. I just had some communication with Nick about how to get this billion part back, which is a very difficult question. And if you also talk about, this is really due to Moore Reed. And this generalization really contains that. So therefore, filling factor 315, and they seems to be the non-billion statistical part of this guy is given by half of K over 3, okay, which something which we saw yesterday, which is the Fibonacci theory. Now there are people believe there's something called a particle hole analog, so which you can make this into 12/5. I don't know how much confidence we have, so the reason people like this is because this was observed in nature already, and it was not.
What is half?
Oh, half. So half means that this k equals 3. In conformal field theory, you have a 4 prime field, so you just take the even spin ones. So in terms of my language, so you have 4 labels, and you just drop those 2 labels, just left with these 2. And I'll explain this, what it is. So it's the level 1 G2 theory in conformal field theory. That's what I will focus on. So what I will do, I have a hard time to decide what to do in terms of 2 parts. So do I do theory first or do I do examples? So I eventually decided to be a mathematician. So I will do theory first and examples second. So that means I will do these 2 theory, the 2 examples only at the second half for those who are interested. I will do the theory first, which is normally a mathematician do. Sometimes try to be a good teacher, although you are a bad one, so just scare them away. Okay, so that's one reason I'm interested in those theory. The second one is already really well explained yesterday, which is, maybe I should slide here. It's a theorem due to Friedman, my colleague Larson, and myself, that if you do k equals not equals 1, 2, 4, and then you can get anionic quantum computers, not very precise, just to say it's a universal. So I won't be really terribly precise. And then, for the other ones actually, if you really work hard, you can still get something. So this is the work of Michael Chetan and Kevin. So you can really also get universality by using, you know, more complicated thing. You know, I would call it topological quantum computing, which means you are using measurement in the middle, which is a little bit. I should say this is also due to first Railway and Alexei. So I will spend time on this computer science part. So I really focus on what I'm good at, which is the mathematics, and then the connection to the two. I'm happy to discuss any question, but if you don't, I will really focus on the theory. Okay, so now the first thing I want to do, I want to define what I mean by topological basis of matter. And the reason I want to try again, because I already saw the trouble with the early speakers, which is, you know, what do we do with this guy? We'll talk about it, so what it is. So here's my try of the definition. So suppose you are given a theory, and let's do some thought experiment. So let's consider two-dimensional spaces, sigma. And it's one of the great achievements in mathematics. All two-dimensional spaces are classified. So there's nothing here to study about classification. So the list is very simple. So sigma can be a disk. I just use this opportunity to introduce some terminology. So it can be a disk,
that can be an annulus, which is the same thing as something called a cylinder, and can be we call a three punctured sphere. You can also call this a pair of pans. And you have a three punctured sphere, and we call this well, you also draw this way. So the reason I draw this is there's a very deep theorem due to Grothendieck, something called reconstruction principle, which is where do you stop with studying interesting theories. This is pretty much where you will stop. And if I have no boundaries, and then you start with a two sphere, and then you have the torus, and pretty much you stop here, and the rest can be any kind of natural theory you can recover. So suppose we have a theory on any this kind of two-dimensional spaces.
Can you clarify what this means? You can stop here. What does this mean?
So if you study like hyperbolic geometry, tri-commutative space, or top-order quantum field theory, and you can ask, you know, what's, if I study a theory on the surface, you know, what will determine the whole theory? And the point is that if you understand the theory up to four punctured spheres and the genus 1, and then you do one more genus 2 here, and the five punctured sphere here give you the consistency. You see the pentagon. That's associativity. So if you think of this as a fusion, and this just tells you, you cut here, that's one way to associativity, the other way is this way, so that's associativity. And then the five punctured sphere give you the pentagon. That's a very deep theory of due to Grothendieck.
By sewing together this,
everything is determined from here. Okay, so that's just a side thing. Now let's imagine first you have closed surfaces. For oriented surfaces. You called me before I put a word oriented onto it. Okay, so I want to consider oriented. So I do want them to be oriented. It's a very interesting question if you can define the theory from non-orientable ones. There's some subtlety there. So now what you can do, suppose you have a theory on sigma, and then we know there's a Hilbert space of sigma, which is the space and then you can ask the ground states. So the ground state manifolds. And then what you get, so for the whole collection of spaces, you get a collection of vector spaces.
Defined is a what?
Doesn't matter, you know, just...
Can I consider L2 of the surface or what?
You can do L2, you can do anything. So just take any quantum system which you think is local. Just do whatever you want. You get a Hilbert space. I will give examples. And then you just pick off the ground states. And then just make this into a whole collection. Okay? And don't think about punctures yet. So, and then...
And what prevents me from taking, say, the trivial Hilbert space, which is just the complex plane?
That's perfectly fine. That's a very good theory. That's the first theory in your mind. Okay, everything's one-dimensional. If this is one-dimensional, everything's one-dimensional, fine. Just for me, it's not interesting because the representation is so boring. Okay, so just take this connection, and now they should be compatible. The reason is... if you take any disk inside this, and the physics on the disk is the same, so therefore this space really captured its
topology.
Okay, so they should be compatible, because any the physics on any disk is the same. And now I will make my assumption. which is I want the system to be gapped in the thermodynamic limit. Okay?
Yeah.
It just means if you take your theory, that's your Hilbert space of states, and pick up the ground states, that's a collection of vector spaces, Hilbert spaces. That's indexed by this surface. So this is an index. So this is a collection of vector Hilbert spaces, indexed by the surface. At the moment, it can depend on metric, depends on all kinds of things. So now I want to make an assumption, which is gap. So the system is gap in the thermodynamic limit. And then I believe, at least physically, we believe the elementary excitations are particle-like or point-like. I don't know how rigorous this can be proved, but that seems, if you don't think there's a proof, just make this as an assumption. And then, from there, because of the gap, I can define statistics.
Yeah, you're always assuming local.
The theory. I think, in my mind, so the microscopic constituent is not necessarily local, but the intersection has to be, the interaction has to be local. And then the emergent thing probably is not local also. So the only the interaction is local.
I'm sorry to be such a pain, but with the structure you introduce, I don't understand what is the notion of thermodynamic limit, and I don't understand what is the notion of the gap.
Okay.
And I don't understand what's the notion of particles.
Forget notion. The definition of particles.
Okay, you want a part? Okay. I was talking with the chat the other day. I said, you know, do you think people will ask me what's the definition of particle?
Yes.
He said, no way.
Yes.
So now you ask me, I do know the definition. It's very rigorous. So, okay. So the whole point we are making, is, you know, the theory has no symmetry or whatever, but that's not quite right. So what I would like to say is, although I really decided I won't talk about this, those kind of theory, there's a symmetry. And the symmetry is not a group. It's called a category. It's called annular or rectangle category. And then the definition of a particle is just the irreducible representations of those categories, which is the best, you know, kind of fitting into high energy physics. So the particle is just irreducible representation of symmetries. And the symmetry of those systems are categories, which are either annular or rectangular, depends on if it's a chiral or not. And then the definition is completely rigorous. Whatever I did later on says a particle, what it means is it's index a irreducible representation of my category, which I will give you an example in the second part of the talk.
And you could have many of them, right? So there are many possible particles, because there could be many irreducible representations of categories.
No, irreducible ones.
Are just limited.
Well, let me tell you this. So let me finish the definition. All the question, it's all fair question. I thought about it, but it's not a good place to talk about those things, because I think there are many philosophical questions. That's not the point of the whole program. The program is let me ask the question later on and address these issues. Okay. So if you I will quickly say thermodynamic limit. So what I will work on will be like a lattice models. And what I want is the lattice model, the lattice goes to a continuum limit. That's what I mean by thermodynamic limit. Okay. And then the gap thing, that's a thick standard. Just, you know, as you go to the thermodynamic limit, you know, the eigenvalue gap, you know, the eigenvalue difference is independent of the size of the lattice. So
is it not just that you say you take some more realistic physical system and you try to isolate a certain sector in the theory, which is then
No, I think that's not the
best. In terms of gaps and masses and thermodynamic limits, in certain cases of such theories, there will be a sector in the theory which behaves like a topological theory.
That's definitely that's not in my mind.
No, my, okay. Yes.
I'm doing, so here, let me tell you.
Well, okay, topological phases. That theory could have a topological phase.
Okay,
but
so.
No, I'm not saying that. That's more.
I don't want to isolate. So let me tell you what I'm thinking. I erased the middle. So I was thinking about the title when Tina asked me 2 weeks ago. I have a good title. So the title should be something like this. So grass, grain, oh, grain's grass color, far, sea, close. But not. So that's the title I can come up with. So this is a word-word translation of a Chinese poem, one line. And you can guess the meaning, which is in the spring, the grass is not green from far away, but from near. Oh, it's green from far away, but not from nearby. Okay? So that's the philosophical point I want to make, which is the electron will be gone. And what you will see, we have these grain charges, the color, that's the topological charge. So we'll forget this microscopic constituents. All I'm working on is the emergent world. So I'm not talking about sec at all. I'm just thinking, completely forget of your underlying microscopic world. This will emerge from somewhere. Now that's the most interesting question I'm thinking about, which is how this can ever happen if fermion bosons get to this weird non-binary anion. I think that's one of the greatest questions to be answered. Okay, so I like questions. So now let me finish the definition, and then I will say something about how the theory. By the way, this is not much contribution in set up the theory. The theory is there. It's just a matter of can we impose this onto the world? And that's the question. So. The topological theory is as rigorous as anything as you can get, like 1 plus 1 equals 2, so it's just a matter of if this is realistic or not. Okay, so now let me continue and then finish the definition. So, if you want to, I can assume that particle statistics will be defined. And then what you do is the following. So, if you have excitations, elementary excitations, see, at points like R1, R2, and Rn in your surface. Okay? So you pin them down there. And then what you have is a surface. You can delete the points around that. Technically, you delete a little neighborhood, but let's don't worry about those things. And then you let F to be a map, which maps this thing back to itself. And keep those punctures fixed. There's some technical issue here. Let's don't worry about that. Topology know very well what to do. So, and then what you do, if you do this, so the thing you should think is this is a disk, and those are punctures, and then you adiabatically change them, the braiding. And then the gap means that if you do adiabatically, this is well defined. So what I get is, I get a representation onto this ground state. So now I can make my definition. So
the technical thing is the braiding?
That's one technical thing. And the other thing is, depends on the species of the particles. You have to fix some of them, leave some of them alone, and that kind of thing. So there's a whole hierarchy of colored mapping class groups.
When you say statistics, are you talking about braiding statistics? Or
it's more general, like a thin twist also.
Okay,
yeah. So it's the whole set of things. So what I want to do is, I want to say the whole thing is not kind of meaningful to talk about a single disk in the topological knot. It's really this whole collection of things, a structure, which will forced upon you. So the definition, the theory is topological. If those things and the representation on it this form a topological quantum field theory. So that's my definition of a topological theory. So if you have a theory, you write down local, which I will do in a moment. And then you have these two set of structures, the ground state manifolds and the statistics. And if you can fit them together so nicely to get a topological quantum field theory, and then I tell you, you have a topological theory. And then all the things we heard yesterday will become theorem, like a fault tolerance, all those kind of things. You can deduce from the axiom. Now the real question is, if this is realistic or not, but that's a different issue. Okay, so...
This definition assumes that I know what's topological quantum field theory.
That's what I will do next. Okay, so this translates the thing into the topological quantum. That's what we'll spend on for the last 15 minutes or something. But
so when you say the question is whether it's yes or not, do you mean that if I have an isotropic condition and describing a system, whether that obeys this or not?
That's how we'll do. That's how I know already. The question is go to the laboratory and measure them. So that's how I'm confident. I will write out for you right away a two theory. We have everything we want. But the question is, can we get this in laboratory? And then we have this wonderful quantum computer to play with. So I think there are two major questions for me. And the first question is, do we really, can we find anything? In nature that will be modeled by those. And that's absolutely the most important question. Otherwise, we are doing math, which I'm pretty happy. Okay, so the second question, I want to classify all TPFTs, which I heard David talk about before. What mathematicians do classify, so it's lots of fun. So in particular, I have a conjecture which I'm working on for the last couple of years, which is the following. So if you take the torus, and we know if you have a topological theory, you have a vector space. Okay, and then you can ask the dimension of that. It turns out this is the same thing as number of particle types in your theory. I will show you. And then my conjecture is, if this is fixed, there are only finite many. So I'm claiming that if you have fixed the number of particle types of your theory, and there's not much room for you to manipulate. There's only finite many theories. Now this is true. Pardon?
Finitely many can be 10 to the 18.
That's fine. But for a mathematician, but for physicists, it turns out it's not that bad. It's very, very limited. If you find any theory, that's a success. It's incredibly hard to get anything. Okay? So it's true for 1, 2, 3, 4. So in principle, if anybody asks me a list for all the theories up to 4 particle type, I can give you, although I don't have.
And what's the definition of type here? What do you mean by particle type?
The dimension of your piece of the
That's what
definition here.
Now for you, that's an easy definition.
Yeah, I mean, I use a physics definition, but I'm...
physics, what's the difference between physics and mathematics?
Particle type. This is not an expression that showed up before.
Oh, yeah. So each particle, like in fractal quantum hole, you carry electric charge, you carry flux, and you also carry something we call topological charge. And yesterday, I think Nick called it quantum spin. So those kind of numbers, I call them topological charge. But the number of different topological charge in the theory, I will call them particle types.
Does it refer to symmetries or quantum?
This refers to the number of irreducible representations of your category. Yeah.
Is the word category already here?
No, I deliberately hide the word category from the.
So particle type is a number
of irreducible. Everything. If you know high energy physics, everything exactly parallel. There's nothing. Just a larger little bit of symmetry from a group to category. That's all. Now, everything exactly parallel to that theory. There's a trivial one, which everything is one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And
you're not allowing that, obviously.
I'm allowing that. That's fine for my theory.
Why
but
can't you then just take the right sums of?
That's violate my axiom, I will show you.
Sorry?
That will violate the axiom of Q cap T, so I will show you why you cannot do direct sum. That's because quantum mechanics is not direct sum. Quantum mechanics is multiplication. So when you direct sum quantum theory, you tensor C many times, which is still one-dimensional. Well, this is for the E-wraps. So if you direct sum, that's not E-wrap. That's composite. Okay, so now let me, I think I, you know, probably made up my face. So I want to give you two examples, and then before I really go further with the theory, so that you can think about it. Seems like, as always, time is a problem. Okay, so let me skip one thing, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing. For example, I think we have probably the world expert on that, so if you have any question, just ask the right person. They should know everything. So the first example is toroidal code. Okay. So if you just write down the Hamiltonian, you can solve it easily. Now that fits into this thing. Okay. And I was planning to write down, but I don't think I have the time. Actually, you saw in Michael's talk. Michael spent most of the time talking about toroidal code. So let me write down a more sophisticated one, which is really just a generalization. This is a doubled Fibonacci. So here's what you do. So what I will do is just write down Hamiltonian. And then, as far as I understand, that's you call a theory. And then everything should be able to deduce from there, which is true. But this is not like a torus code. If you really work on it, you can solve it without help. Maybe you can, but that would be very impressive. So you consider trivalent graph inside a surface. Okay, so draw any one you want. Just draw a trivalent one. Just draw on your surface you have in mind. And then what you do, on each edge, you put a spin degree of freedom. And then you can write down a Hilbert space, which just directs tensor C2 for each edge in your graph. And that's the space I wrote down at the very beginning. And this is the kind of thing. So you have a theory, you have a Hilbert space. And then what I work on will be the Fibonacci. So yesterday Nick used the label set 0,1. It turns out for most of the Q people, we call this 1 the tau. And tau represents the golden ratio. That's my confusion yesterday. So just kind of unfortunate already. We have a So and then we have the fusion rule, which is tau tau is legal to get tau, and it's legal to get one. I think you can rotate and read any way you want. That's pretty much the fusion rule. So what I will introduce is now the kind of generalization of the canonical delta symbol. If you have delta ij k is equal to 0, if ij k is kind of legal, admissible, which means it's appeared in the fusion rule. No, I think I should be 1 and 0 otherwise. Okay? So just a generalization of the delta symbol. Actually, for this theory, in general, it will, but for this one, it turns out to be fully symmetrical. So there's no issue. So I think you write down Hamiltonian like this. H equals negative the vertices sum operator and minus the sum of P, which is placket. So I think it's worth doing this. This also Michael hinted when he talked about this the other day. This has an important rule. So a basis of this Hilbert space is given by spin configurations. Okay. So just one or tau on each edge, and that's the basis. And then if you take any vertex or side and you define an operator OV acting on any spin configuration, and what you do is you go to your spin configuration and you go to the vertex V and you look at that vertex and to see if these three are legal or not. So if this is ijk, you just write on delta ijk and the same thing. So that's the admissible the fusion rule. And then you have it's a projection operator, yeah. And then
you look at the ground state.
Yeah, I want to look at the ground state. Yeah. And then there's a second operator which you focus on a plaquette. So it's a horrible formula, but topologically it's completely trivial. So what you want to do is you want to enforce the flux of here is a zero, okay? So all you need to write down is the operator which enforces the zero flux. And I don't think it's worth writing down. If you know the formula, which I'll probably explain later on, it's completely trivial. The formula is a little bit horrible, but depends on your point of view. You can either say it's beautiful or it's ugly. So I guess explain what you are doing. So what you do is you put something, a loop here, with certain combination of particles. Now what the analog of representation theory is put a regular representation onto that particle. Okay? And then you can start to fuse from here and push around this loop. And when you come back, it should be consistent. And you know, same thing as the loop value of this loop multiply the state. And that's what you write down. And a bunch of 60 symbols.
So it adds on 12 edges.
If you are thinking hexagons. But you don't have to, you know, focus on hexagons. Then it depends on... You are thinking hexagon lattices. So it's
a 12... on the edges of the cell and also the...
The income ones, yeah. Yeah. It's a, if you do a torus, if you use the honeycomb lattice, it's a 12-fold body interaction. For theorists, there's no trouble, it's local. For experimental physicists, they might cry. Okay, so now let me just make some general remarks.
It's basically a gauge theory. More so than Gauss's law of the vertices, and then you more have no flux.
Yeah, so it's kind of a, you know, let me, exactly, so it's kind of a, it's a doubled gauge theory. So it's, so let me make a remark. That's exactly actually what I want to mention. So what's the difference between the two theories? So they both have the beautiful property that you can write them down completely on the two-dimensional surfaces. You're not using anything, just completely on the surface. And what that means is, if you have any mapping class group action, which means you do any change of the space, you automatically get a real representation on the ground state. Okay. So that have a very significant constraint on the theory. And it turns out that says the topological central charge should equal zero. And for conformal field theorists, that means the conformal theory charge is always a multiple of 24. Okay. So that's very, very special. So the theory, if you can write down purely onto the two-dimensional plane, then the conformal field theory, whatever it's corresponding to, has to have a central charge is a multiple of 24. So then there's another subtlety here, which is this theory is purely a double in the sense that there's this Fibonacci theory and there's this dual theory. Now this theory is nothing but the tensor of the two. Just take one copy this way, the other copy that way, and put them together. You can think of, you put a magnetic flux this way and this way, they cancel each other. And this guy here is also a double, but it's more sophisticated. It's not a direct tensor. It's called a quantum double. And the point is that there are no square roots of this theory. You really don't have a theory which is good, and then when you do the double, you get the one, because obviously, you know, won't get this one here. So this is also a double, but it's a non-trivial double. It's called quantum double. But the dual, although, you know, the theory is like a purely, well, you won't see the dual in the theory I wrote down, because it's already dual to itself. So the one to be, you have to see the dual. Exactly what I want to say next is something called chiral TQFTs. So those are the ones which I will talk about, which are related to a fractal quantum Hall. So
but you say this is an example. What I want to understand is it now an example of the definition you gave? I mean, this is a complete theory with Hamiltonian and everything.
Like, yeah. So
I have to write this Hamiltonian.
Okay.
What ingredients really?
Okay. So here's okay. Here. I mean, yeah. Thanks for reminding me. I didn't finish my.
The field theory has no Hamiltonian. It's supposed to be equal to zero.
No. It's different thing. It's different thing. That's a very confusing point. So I'm easy to explain. So look at your microscopic constituent. You have this space here. Okay. You pick off your ground state. And obviously, if you look at the Hamiltonian for this guy, if you restrict on here, that's nothing. It's a constant. It's zero. But you still have a microscopic Hamiltonian for this one to for this guy to emerge. That's what I'm writing down. This one obviously is a constant. But although it's a constant, it's still very interesting. If you solve Schrodinger's equation, you see, oh, I get a Hamiltonian which is zero. Now, aha, there's nothing to solve. That's wrong. Because if you assume your domain of a function is connected, and that's easy, it's a constant. But your domain definition is not connected. You still have a choice of constant on each domain. And that's exactly the Brady representation. So each braid represents a connecting component. So the Schrodinger equation still have a solution. It's just more interesting, more rigid. So that's exactly the point here. You are thinking the Hamiltonian restricted ground state. Of course there's nothing there. It's a constant. It's not zero, it's a constant. That's actually caused a very big problem later on, because the particle do accumulate phase because of the energy. But it's a constant, so that's not really.
Can't it be a different constant for each signal?
No.
It's just ground state energy. The ground state energy can depend on these parameters.
Maybe. I don't really think that much. I thought the yeah, I think they should be the same. I'm thinking you fix the feeding fraction, you know, it's kind of like that kind of parameters. So I have to say I don't know that. Anyway, so that's it. So now I want to talk about chiral PQFTs. So those are the ones which you cannot write down. At least I don't know how to write down the surface. So what you need to do, let me just make this remark. I think I will stop. So the reason we are interested in chiral TQFT is because it's believed that for fractal quantum Hall liquid, those are the ones which are chiral. In a sense, it's like a square root of those things. And so what you need to write down is now, to write down the theory, let's do a simple case, sigma is closed. Yeah, this one here. You ask the question I cannot answer. So that's an open question, which is, can you recover the central charge of the boundary conformal field theory as a real number? Or the best you can do is just to recover its modulo 24. That's, I think it's unknown. I think it's still unknown.
So from the topological theory, you can recover the central charge modulo 8.
No, actually, it depends on, if you just focus on the modulo tensor categories 8 on the nodes. Yeah. But if you really resolve the representation into, instead of talking about projective, if you talk about real representation, and then you need to take a one third of root, which will give you the 24.
24 comes from framing.
Yeah, yeah.
If you introduce framing on frame manifold.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if you want to extend to the third dimension, you need to introduce the framing.
Well, yeah, there is a different way of extension due to Kevin Walker, where the extension is invariant and the central charge is defined more than
you can do. Okay, but the standard, you know, what I would do is just introduce the framing. And then you need to take a further root of unity to get a linear representation, then you module 24. But beyond that, I don't know.
This comment on this question. I think it's a very important question how one extends the theory, not as a topological theory, but some kind of physical or algebraic theory, to capture the central charge. It seems that something is missing from the theory.
What does that mean? So if you take the chiral part of this double, I mean, it's undoubled Fibonacci, one doesn't know what the conformal field theory on the edge is.
I think that's some issue, yeah. I have to say I don't know too much about conformal field theory. That's something I definitely want to understand, which is to what extent the relation between the boundary and the bulk. There are lots of nonsense in the literature, but I don't think the question is settled. I think it's still a very deep question.
And what definition of the central charge do you have in mind? Usually, central charge related to Grassora group, which means different response theory to the diffeomorphisms. This theory doesn't respond to any diffeomorphisms, it's topological. What do you mean by?
Okay, I will give the definition, but probably it does not make any sense. So let me give you the definition just for completeness. So what you can do is, if you set up a theory, and then you can define the frame link invariant. So give me any link in this plane, you can write down an invariant. So what you can do is you can write down the invariant of this guy with a composite label. And you can write down the other one with the same label, and this is the regular representation, the analog of the regular representation of group theory. And that's called P plus, and that's called P minus. Maybe I draw the thing wrong, sorry. Actually now you don't even know which one's plus, which one's minus, so I can check. This is plus, this is minus, okay. Okay, so you write down the linking invariant of those two, and they have the same norm. And if you just take this you divide it by 1 square root 2, it turns out to be e to pi r over 4 and c. And that's related to the central charge of conformal field theory.
This c is the central charge of the boundary theory.
Yeah.
Some theory on the boundary
is consistent with a little bit of a problem. Yeah, I understand this, but the central charge appears in this topic, so I'm not clear about that.
So that's how it's appeared.
But you have to make each boundary on the manifold. Manifold must have boundaries to show this. And then it's not topological anymore.
Well, the framing is what.
Yeah, this is related to the framing issue, which is what.
Maybe the right way to say would be, excuse me if it's wrong, that this topological field theory shows a set of braidings, but some same braiding may arise in conformal field theories, and conformal field theories characterized by central charge. Maybe this is the best way to say it. So it's actually appeal to braiding, not to diffeomorphisms.
True, you know, it's not really okay, so here what's really related to. It's related to another quantity which you know, which is the scaling dimension of a prime field. So that's the real thing which controls this guy. It's the scaling dimension in conformal field theory, which is the topological spin of the particle types. So I think I might introduce that things later on will maybe make a little bit more clear. So I think I should stop, and then for those who are interested, I will see more about these chiral things, which are related to closer related to fractal quantum Hall. That.
Okay. So
thank you. We get together here at 10.
Okay, so I think I will finish the definition of TKFT. So I think otherwise my definition of topological phases of matter is not complete. So let me say a few words about TKFT. So I think I mean 2 plus 1, which is always. So it turns out this is still a very difficult thing to study. So normally what people do is people forget the third dimension, study only the two-dimensional part. It's called modular functor. So this is the 2D part, which means you don't care about three manifold invariants or something. Just talk the part of which I did.
Which two dimensions?
Really just mean the surfaces. Sigma. Well, I will give a definition of modular functor. Okay. So. It's not exactly two, there's some three dimensional thing there, but and then there, here, the thing to study this, normally you study something called a ribbon tensor category. So, which is very close related to conformal field theory. So this is basically, I would call it an anionic model. It's really those things. So unfortunately, we know a lot, but we still don't know everything. So you can see from here, you can go this way by compose these two arrows. And the opposite neither is kind of known. The subtlety is very small. Well, the subtlety is very small, but it's very difficult. There's some really, really I start to believe it's kind of important. So,
do you refer to things like that the central charge is only known modulo something, for example? Is that what you
That's not actually, both of those things won't resolve that problem. They still have the same kind of data. it won't resolve the central charge at all. So basically the way what it is here, you basically forget about three manifold invariants. You get those guys. And here, what do you do? Just focus on the plane and do the braiding things, the linking invariants. And it's here. So now I think I want to define. So what I will do is I will really talk about those things first. I then pretend this is the same thing as a TQFT, which is, you cannot give me any kind of example. Everything known, they are the same. Just theoretically, we don't know for sure. Okay, so what this will do, we'll also solve the problem which... Okay, so let me give you the definition of modular functor. So here's the definition. So a modular functor, so what it does is, for any surface, you will get a Hilbert space. And for each self-map, you will get a unitary transformation. And there's some little bit detail about, you know, puncture, so let's ignore that. And this subject to the axioms. Yeah, that's intentionally. So with something called functor. So this applies to an object, to another object. And they send a morphism to another morphism. So it's a well-established mathematical notation. So here what you think. Here's a sigma, here's a sigma. And V, you apply everything to it. So you send a surface to a vector space, send another surface to a vector space, send a diffeomorphic between the two to a linear.
But now the map is on, the vector space is V, and the map is V.
The map is V. F.
Right.
This is a diffeomorphic between the surfaces. This is a linear map between the same vector space. It's a unitary transformation, actually. Okay, so then what you have is you have finitely many labels which has a hat such that A can go to A hat and A hat hat equals A. So each particle has a dual part type, which makes perfect good sense. And also there's a particle called 1 that when you hat, it's equal to self. So the trivial particle is always its own dual type, which makes, you know, perfect good sense. And then just says a particle dual twice back to itself. That also makes sense. And now we have axioms. So there are 6 of them. And the first one is, if you take the empty set and consider it as a surface, and then the vector space associated to it is the one-dimensional one. And that's kill all the probable examples, you count example you will have in mind for many things. And the second one is completely trivial for quantum mechanics. If you have a disjoint union, and then this will be a tensor. If you have a two disjoint union of spaces, and the vector space will tensor. And the third one, if you take your sigma, you reverse your orientation. And you obviously get a dual space. So those are the easy ones. So now the hard ones.
Are you talking about non-oriented surfaces?
No, I'm not considering them. So yeah, so everything should be oriented. And also, to be 100% patent, so I'm also suppose this is oriented, compact, and then there's another subtlety, the boundary. There's some orientation on that. So the next three are the important ones. So the fourth one, which is called a disk axiom, which is, if you take a disk, if you label its boundary by a label, one of those, and then you take the vector space, this will be zero if the label is not trivial. C if A equals one. So this is pretty physical, and actually characterizes the topological property. So what it says is that I will refer those labels as many names. So I call them topological charges, or particle types. They are the same thing. So what it says is that topological charge cannot be supported on the disk. Okay. You can, no matter how big your disk in your system, just they cannot support topological charges.
One, you mean that is it trivial? It is zero.
Oh, did I use the? Oh, yeah, I'm fine. So one means this trivial particle. Yeah.
But previously, D was defined on surfaces. Now the surface comes with the coefficient with A.
So each boundary of your surface has to have a label. That physically means that. It's excitation. So if you focus on excitation, the excitation carries some local charge which we forget, but it carries a topological charge. And that topological charge is the label on the boundary around that excitation. And then for the infinity boundary, you also have, you can have topological charge spread onto the infinity boundary, become a non-local field, but it can live there. That's fine. The charge can go to the boundary, become a non-local field.
Topological charge on the boundary, or is boundary
including
a topological charge?
It's on the, this is really on the boundary. The boundary, the topological charge spread on the boundary, really. Okay, I don't see much difference, but that's my interpretation.
Well, because you think of the boundary as a single point, I thought these charges were isolated were points.
No, that's a very important point. So the label is true. The label normally I'm thinking as the elementary excitation which is in the bulk, which is a point. But also actually is probably part of the defect of the theory. And the boundary, where the charge escapes to the boundary, and you use the same set of label also to label those non-local field on the boundary by the same label.
But so there could be more points in that surface than there is
in the
overall.
Assume there's no topological charge in the.
Oh, that's assumed.
Yeah, yeah. But that's an axiom. So suppose nothing in the middle.
In there. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. Then.
A has to be zero.
Have to be. So just no topological charge can be, you know, yeah.
Otherwise.
Yeah. Like this is a very important axiom. So somebody asked, you know, I think you asked a question about, you know, why this is fault tolerance. So the real thing, if you really chase everything down, this gives you the fault tolerance, the code property of the topological systems. So the annulus axiom, the next one, is that if you have an annulus, so think about fractal quantum for liquid. You have a charge A here, a charge B there, spread on there, and you ask the ground state. This will be zero if A not a dual particle, if the dual is one dimensional. And what it means is that a topological charge cannot be changed if the topology does not change. If you just follow the topology, there will be no change of topological charges. There's some confusion about in general, if you write out Hamiltonian, if you restrict to the boundary, to the annulus, and normally you not necessarily get one-dimensional. You might get high-dimensional ones. That's not a contradiction. Because if right now Hamiltonian restricts to the boundary, it's not guaranteed you will get a particle. You might get a superposition. And that will give you high-dimensional spaces. So that's not true. Okay, so then the last one is the gluing axiom. So it means the following. So if you take your surface, sigma, and if you cut along a loop, so now you become one part is sigma 1, the other part is sigma 2. And it's not necessarily two pieces, it might be the same thing, they might connect it to each other, like a torus. If you cut like this, and you have two more boundary components but still one piece, that's fine. And now you ask how the ground state on this guy related to the ground state on this cutted one. And the axiom says you should go through all your label set here. That's the whole thing here. And you direct sum them. And put an X here, put a dual particle there. And there's a technical issue which one is dual. So let's ignore that. There's a way to figure out which one should be the dual. And basically, physically, you think about you have a fractal quantum Hall liquid. If you want to use a scissor to cut, you have to have a base point, you have to have an orientation. And that determines this, which one is which. Okay, so that's.
So the statement of this axiom is if you have, let's say, quantum Hall and so, you cut the toll, you will get on the two edges that you get out of the cut. The quadriparticle and it's
a. And it's dual.
It's a dual. Mm-hmm. And if there are several types of them, you will get a superposition of all types.
Direct sum of them. So.
So the direct sum is a superposition or a.
I think Matthews think about this question, which is, if you have a real quantum Hall fluid, if you try to cut open something, how much potential, you know, if there are any kind of, you know, critical moment, you know, the system will change because it's this entangle of the top particle system. I think that's really a physical question, what you ask, which is, you know, in the end, when you cut, you know, what happens? For me, it just completely makes it classical. It just, one of the chart will appear with a probability proportional to its quantum dimension. So that's my answer. If you really cut it open. But the question is, if you really just apply some potential, you know, kind of a soft cut, you know, when this will really become what I'm saying, you know, completely become classical, that seems like, I don't know. I mean, that's a very interesting question.
In the case of the toric code, though, you use a coherent superposition of different labels to encode protection.
Okay, yeah, that's, I think, you know, that's, you know, really depends on kind of, you know, the Hamiltonian. If you cut, the kind of, you know, how you cross those things, I think that makes a difference. So, but I think if you really just, you know, that's a physical question, really, I don't know much. But for me, mathematically, what it means is that you just cut this open completely. From a torus, you now become a cylinder. And there's an inside, there's an outside. And then the chart will appear with probability proportional to quantum dimension. Question?
These axioms make no reference to a Hamiltonian.
That's true. So actually, for me, a top particle theory has no Hamiltonian description, which is fair. The only thing you can do is Lagrangian formulation, which has to do with, you know, different constant with different connected components. So the Hamiltonian is really a constant, in a sense. So we are restricting a Hamiltonian to the ground state, so we don't expect any Hamiltonian formulation of the theory. So.
There's no fusion at this moment?
The fusion is encoded in here. I will say where they are right afterwards. So let me just finish the definition. So I give you almost complete definition. There's only one last thing which is really hard to say, which is the module function have two layers of structures. There is a vector space, there is a mapping class group acting. What I give you, the axiom, is only one part. It's not the vector space, the Hilbert spaces. And there's also the mapping class group action. And they should be all compatible with these kind of things. So there's also the symmetry of the system, which is given by the diffeomorphism of your system. Think of your disk as you change the shapes or something. And that also should be compatible with these axioms. And that's the second part of the thing, which I won't really specify. But it's not a trivial thing to figure out, but it's pretty much determined. Okay, so given a few details, that's a complete definition of a modular functor. So if you have a system with the ground state will satisfy the six axiom, And that is what we call it a topological theory.
And is the modular related to the modular property or the mapping class group
there? I will give you the, you asked the question, the second thing I will mention will be the modularity.
About the cut. So if I have a disk and I cut the hole inside the disk.
Yeah.
And I'm in some quantum hole state.
You will only get a zero, you will only get a zero charge.
Right. So how do I know that out of the axiom?
That's because of this guy. So it's the combine of the two.
Okay.
If you cut the things, that's the combine of the two. Actually, the interesting part I was thinking physically is the anti-dot. It's kind of not a complete cut. It's kind of a potential dip.
Yeah.
It's really, I think the real interesting physical question is how precise the real physical system approximate these axioms. I think that's the most interesting question. You know, if you cut out the disk, you're not cutting out the disk, you're just deepening the potential. And the question when it's become a complete cut. That seems so. Okay, so now let me address Sandra's question. So where's the fusion rule? It's all here. So you can recover the fusion rule easily as follows. So if you take two particle A and B, particle type, so, and then you do this, okay? And then you have put the label C here, and you ask what's the dimension of this, call this NABC, okay? And then A tensor B, direct sum of NABC, and that's the fusion rule. And modularity, why it's called modular? Because the theory...
The tensor, in what sense is
the tensor? It's complete nonsense, it's just a notation. You can... There's a famous mathematician, MacLean, he discovered the categorical theory. He's strongly against the term tensor category. He will call it binary operation. So he put a dot there. So it doesn't matter, so just distinguish with. As a mathematician, you have all the freedom you have. I know you guys don't. There's a word there. So that's just is a binary operation. So then modularity is related to this. So think of the torus as the periodic boundary condition. And there's a 90 degree rotation either way. And what will happen is M will get to L, and L will get negative M if you do a 90 degree rotation, right, back to itself. And according to the theory, this is a self-homeomorphism of the torus. And we have a vector space. And this S move should have a unitary transformation on this space. Now this is almost the S matrix, except the way I describe it is a transformation rather than a matrix. It turns out there's a preferred basis of this space given by the annulus axiom. And that's determined the S matrix. So that's give you the modularity. Now the reason for people don't know this. So the mapping class group of the torus is so-called SL2Z. It's all 2x2 matrices determined equals 1. And this is the two-fold cover of the famous modular group in number theory. So that's why it's called modular.
So to be sure, the fusion rules are additional data here?
No, it's a consequence. It's encoded in the axioms.
So if I, but I'm still confused. Was it an insane axiom that I do? I give you a set of labels, and I give you these surfaces and these maps. Now, where did I specify these things? I mean, how do I get them?
I missed one notation. So sorry. Okay, they take the three puncture sphere. you label that by ABC. By my theory, you have a vector space. And then there's a dimension of that vector space, and that's an integer.
That's the definition
of this integer.
Right.
That's the dimension of this guy. And if dimension equals zero, that means you can never get this particle type. And dimension, whatever this number is, tells you the multiplicity of your...
What is up and down? There is no notion of up and down.
For the topological theory, it doesn't matter which one's up, which is down.
And what is the formula after that? So
this is just define.
Define the left-hand side.
Define the left-hand side as equal to that. It's purely a formal thing. Just tells you if you fuse these two particle types, this is the one will come out of this fusion. That's all.
So what if the...
Now, what about the fusion rule?
Oh, the fusion rule, just a set of a rule tells you if you take two particle types, we bring them together, what are the other particle types that will come out of it? And if they do come out, what's the multiplicity?
So, what comes out of what? We have these six axioms.
Yeah.
Now let's say that we have a theory where there are four types.
Okay.
A, B, C, D.
Yeah.
This is not yet enough to fix this N, A, B, C, right?
Well, it's fixed. It's a consequence of this axiom. So this fusion rule is this.
But you gave the dimensions already as part of the axiom.
Well, if you have a surface, you have more than a dimension. You have a Hilbert space.
Okay.
The label, the boundary of this thing is labeled. This is the first line gives you. This is more than just the dimension. This gives you a Hilbert space. And in particular, you can ask what's the dimension of the Hilbert space associated to the pair of pans with the label ABC.
Yes. So that indeed is. So like the pentagon type things, that's all part of this
curve line. If you give me those things here, it's all encoded in there. It just tells you the pentagon is nothing but to say I have a well-defined space for five puncture spheres.
Right.
That's all. It's completed there. It's
compatible with all these.
Another way to say it, what's the pentagon? It's not something really terribly important. It just tells you I can give you a well-defined vector space for the five punctured sphere. That's all. That's the pentagon.
And then braiding is?
Braiding.
Somewhere here.
Braiding at the moment is not, in here, but it's already encoded in the second line. Because I didn't really write it, this can have a punctures. So you just take the disk with the punctures, and then what is the F? F is a braiding. And then you get a map onto the space, and that's your braiding, that's your representation.
Okay, so the first things are in these.
Those two.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Compatible.
Yeah. Absolutely.
By all these pentagon and hexagon relations, but that is already taken.
It's all built in. Yeah, everything is built in.
Okay.
Another way to say it, you are solving hard, pentagon, hexagon. All you are doing is just to make sure when you assign those things, they are consistent. That's all. That's what you are solving for a theory.
What are the conditions then on the functor F? There is no condition so far mentioned, but it seems you said there is something that gives braiding.
All you say is that if any like this, you get a map on the Hilbert space, and what you get is a representation. That's all the axiom just asks you for a representation of the mapping class group.
Yeah, mapping class. Yeah.
Because this is part of inside the mapping class group.
So far it plays no role in realizing fusion rules, all this was independent of this.
Yeah, so far the fusion rule determined by the dimension of the Hilbert spaces. And the braiding comes from the second layer of the structure, the representation of the mapping class group, which is a special case of the braid groups. So So that's for the second part of structure. Okay, so there's one important thing in the theory. So
and this was now a category defined here now?
I defined this something called modular functor, which is, so this is a terminology cooked by Graham Segal. So he studied hard what is a conformal field theory. He realized of a field theory have two pieces. You to glue them together, you need this guy, a modular functor. And then Witten made the important observation that if you want to quantize Trin-Simon theory, what you get is just those bunch of Hilbert spaces from modular functors. That's essentially what he did in 1988.
Can you connect this to Trin-Simon theory?
Oh, yeah. I can.
No, I mean, I know it's possible.
Yeah, let me. It's very easy. Yeah. So, how about, I don't want to go to the second part at all, so I don't think I have time. So what I will do, how about let me put the next thing on here, and then answer your question, then I will stop there. So there's one more thing which in the theory which is very important. So this is the famous S matrix. And there's another one which is the Dent twist. So I'm hiding some topology. I'm not assuming you guys you all know, but I just I think if I do come in to talk about topology, I won't really say much about topological quantum field theory. So there's another thing, which is if you talk about the mapping class group of a surface, how do you visualize all the maps from sigma back to itself? Now there are two kinds of maps. So let's think of the easy case. Sigma just a surface with a bunch of a puncture. Okay? One kind of a map is, we already know, it's braiding. Okay? That's one kind of map. And the second kind of map is called Dent twist, which is, you take a curve like this, and then what you do, you cut off a piece like this. Okay? Now this can be identified as this one. That's obviously the same. And then what you can do is, you can rotate this 0 degree, and this, whatever the proportion to 2 pi, I rotate this guy 2 pi. If you do this rotation, what happens is, on the boundary you see nothing. And the interior, one of this guy is twisted like this. Okay? And then, if you take this one, map into here, do the twist, and then map back, what happens is, on the boundary of the two things, you did nothing. And in the middle, what happens is this line become twisted into this line, and just parallel twist this. Now, there's a theorem. Everything inside here is a composition of either braiding or Dent twist. Yeah, that's a very important theorem. Everything composed of those two kind of moves, either braiding or twist. And now, if you have a modular functor, every self-map gets a matrix, a linear transformation. So this guy should get one. And then the important thing is, if this curve you do Dent twist upon, it's non-separative, which means you cut here, you won't get two pieces, still one piece. And then what you get is a Dent twist on the curve C, which is non-separating. And this gives you a matrix which is conjugate to something like this, diagonal. And what's this theta I? These are the topological spin. So what if theta I is defined by take a particle doing this? So if you take a particle, if you rotate 360 degrees, you saw a picture in Sandra's talk, and you will get a phase. And that's those numbers we'll get in.
The matrix is not unitary.
This matrix is unitary.
Is the complex number of modulus 1.
More than that, Waffle has a theorem. They are root of unities.
What?
They are root of unities. They have finite order. That's a theorem of Waffle from string theory. if you can push down to this general abstract context.
What fixes the dimension of the matrix?
That's the number of particles. It's a dimension of the torus.
So for every n twist, I associate a matrix whose dimension is fixed by the number of particles. The root of unity is constant.
Yeah, it's a root of unity. And the,
it's ribbon element.
It's the ribbon element. It's the representation of the universal Kashmir.
Okay,
so I think you already know you're supposed to think this as a ribbon so you don't get confused. I want to derive two important things and then answer Adi's question about transcendental theory, and then we'll stop there. So one important consequence which really answers the question, you cannot get one theory and direct some another one. So that's this axiom. So if you have a top particle quantum field theory, and then no matter which theory you get, on the two spheres, this is always one dimensional. Okay? So there's no exception. That's a consequence. It's a consequence, yeah. It's a corollary.
It's a consequence of what?
What's the axiom? Let me show you.
They
just cut along this loop and become either the particle here or dual. I think the disk axiom tells you the only survived one is the trivial particle. It is one dimensional. And the second one is the torus have a dimension always equals the number of the particle types. And that's again the Green axiom and the annulus axiom. If you take this one, if you cut, you get the annulus x q. And then this is one dimensional, and it's a direct sum.
The particle and its dual are considered the same type, or
the dual is inside the set of labels. So each particle has a dual particle, which is also inside your label set. So it's all it's inside.
So the number of particle types is, you count the particle and its dual as one type or as two types?
It can be the same type, it can be different. It depends on theory.
It's not the same, then you can't.
If they are not the same, then that's a different particle type. Yeah, just it's the same thing as a representation. If the dual representation is not isomorphic to the representation, that's a different particle type. If they are isomorphic, then that's the same particle type.
And the particle is also counted.
It's always counted. Yeah, you always have the trivial particle. It's always self-dual because the trivial representation is always self-dual. Okay, so I don't think I have time to do anything about the second part. So I kind of do the same thing. So my original plan is to show you everything you want to know about this kind of non-binary statistic. You can really sit down and compute. It's not hard at all. You don't need to know anything about quantum groups or anything. Just draw a few pictures and you should be able to compute. So I don't think I have time to do any of that. So let me just answer Adi's question, which basically the same thing. How you get from transcendental theory to this formalism. So and actually, if you really think about this, everything is motivated by transcendental theory. Okay. So now let me just explain what's the connection. So we have a transcendental action. We have this famous formula. I don't know the here. Depends on, you write this as uppercase, lowercase, there are different number you can put in there. And that's the level of the theory. So you integrate on a three manifold, you get something defined, modulo integers if you write the right thing here. So you have to pick a compact E group. and you have to take a level there. Okay. So now you ask, if I have a surface, how do I get a vector space? And so here's what you do. You have a surface sigma. And then, let's do the easy case. Suppose it's closed. Okay? And then it's a theorem in three-dimensional topology. In this case, completely trivial. You can always write this as a boundary of a three manifolds. Okay? This is so easy. If you have a torus, all you need to do is just fill in. Okay? So you always have a solid thing which that's at the boundary. And now you can write down a path integral. So what you do is, suppose you have a gauge field on sigma. I'm ignoring many subtleties. We are doing physics at the moment, so a lot of things I won't say. So suppose you have a gauge field on sigma. And then what you can do, you can ask to do the integral, the path integral, on all the fields on A, on all gauge fields on the three manifolds here, whose boundary is this guy, such that when A restricts the boundary, it's small a. Okay, you can do that. Just do your path integral. And now what do you get? What you get is, for each gauge field on the surface, you get a number. Okay. So therefore, what you get is a linear functional. So the Chern-Simon path integral give you a function of A to a complex number. So that's the path integral gives you. So each gauge field on the surface, you get a number. And now, this is the part which you have to argue. If the theory really is as we expected, and turns out there will be lots of symmetry. So what you get so far is an infinite dimensional vector space, because the gauge field on the surface is infinite dimensional. So therefore, what you get is the dual space of that infinite dimensional space. And then a topological theory just means this function has a huge kernel. It collapses down to a finite dimensional vector space, which is my V sigma.
What is Lauch Kelvin?
What?
What is Lauch Kelvin? What object is Lauch Kelvin?
To.
You just said that something collapses. Start to call this dual.
Okay. So here's what you do. So if you do the path integral on the disk, and you put in all the constraints, you quantize that theory, and you will get a disk axiom I described to you. So that tells you a disk in this path integral will contribute nothing to your theory. And that pretty much tells you this huge dual space turns out to be finite dimensional.
So it means that there will be a finite number of values?
There will be finite many independent functionals from here to... So here you have this space, huge space A, of gauge fields on sigma. Mm-hmm. And now the path integral gives you a dual space.
The dual space is
just the functionals, so it's just functionals from this A to complex numbers.
Mm-hmm. And what you say that this A
this is a finite dimensional space in the Chern-Simon case. If you really push the actually you can do better. If you do integrate by parts, you will see the Witten, West Riemann Witten term come out of this integration by parts. So actually that's done by long time ago by Greg Moore. I don't know, Witten discovered this first, but that's an explanation. So that's what this vector space is. And
to start with, there's an enormous number of local degrees, of so-called local degrees of freedom, and then the invariance is so enormous because it's
exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you start with an infinite amount, an infinite dimensional vector space, then you start to quantize, then it turns out. So now let me, I have this heuristic, so let me just mention one subtlety, and then I will stop. So if you think about this, it's obvious this is topological invariant because of the transcendental functional. And it turns out there's one subtlety, which is this is not defined when you do the measure. And it turns out this depends on the inside of this thing here, and the metric a little bit. Not a lot, but that's the framing issue. You know, the framing issue comes because this your defined measure or the space of gauge fields is not topological invariant. There's a little bit of residual thing about metric, which is the framing.
Can you remind us what the framing issue was?
The framing is that if you write down the S matrix and the T matrix from this theory, it turns out it's very important they are not linear transformations, they are really matrices. Okay, that's the theory actually provides you the matrices, not just a linear transformation. Because you have a canonical basis given by caricatures.
By the characters?
Yeah, whatever the algebraic thing you study, if there's a caricature there, which is the canonical basis. And then what happens if you do ST Q, which you want to get the representation of the modular group, and you want this to be x squared, and you won't get it. There's some factor here. This factor tells you you won't get a linear representation of the nodes. You get a projective one. Now, to lift this projective into a real representation, which is guaranteed because this group is so-called centrally closed, it's always guaranteed you can do it. And when you do it, it turns out this path integral not only depends on this sigma, it also depends on a choice of this thing a little bit. And in terms of three-manifold invariant, if you do the whole thing, just no boundary, it's not quite a three-manifold invariant. There's a little bit of tangent boundary you have to remember.
But there is an issue here which I'm confused by. Since you allowed surfaces that were not necessarily closed, they cannot be implemented as boundaries of Anton.
So here's what you do. You still do it. And now you have a boundary. So now you have, this is the thing which is really interesting. I think it's very important actually, which relates to the second part. So I'm thinking fractional quantum hole. So I think for fractional quantum hole to occur, we need a thickness. Now there is exactly the point that you cannot write the theory on the surface. You have to write the theory inside a solid Hanner body. And then what you do, the path integral is not, so here you have a gauge fields which is really on the inside here. And then for the one with the boundary, you still have this solid, but now the thing is you have a bunch of disks here. So now what you need to do is you need to put some kind of condition in the middle, kind of a flux come out, which is the particle of your theory. Now that's the labeling we'll remember. So it's pretty thought over by mathematicians.
So you started now from the transdimensional version and brought us to the point where this is the fundamental.
Yeah, this is fundamental.
So how is this related? So we.
So now we have. So now what am I? Give me a sigma.
If I give you sigma,
and then there will be this guy. Modulo, whatever the kernel you will discover.
So if I give you sigma, Lie group and K. You can calculate in principle the dimension of that of A star.
Yeah.
How is this related to the modular function?
This is assignment. This is my V sigma.
Your V sigma is this A star.
It's star modulo whatever the thing. Actually,
modulo what?
Modulo that you have studied the path integral, the property of the path integral. That's something you have to modulo. Yeah. What number? Actually, this is not. This is definitely not a theorem. This is a Witten claim. So if you read Witten's paper, so what he did, he made one observation, which is if you do this quantization of the transdimension, and the answer come out to be the modular functor. That's the paper about. So
this would then be the dimensions of the conformal blocks.
Exactly. Yeah. So his idea is his idea is how do you solve a transdimensional theory? The way to solve a transdimensional theory is you integrate onto the boundary, discover the West-Zumino-Witten functional, and you write down this guy, that's the answer to your quantization. So a modular function is just a quantization of Chern-Simon theory. And then it took over by mathematician. We think purely abstractly and made everything rigorous. And now we want to apply it to the world. I think I will stop here.